So look, big tech has created walled gardens, and they entice you into their walled gardens with all these free services. But once you're inside the walled gardens, they continuously collect your data, serve you ads, and they want to keep you in the gardens. And it's very hard to escape the gardens. And part of the reason is that big tech platforms lack interoperability. So say if I want to get off of Facebook, but unless all my friends leave en masse, I can't communicate with those that remain on Facebook. So I'm kind of stuck using Facebook. So it actually means that there's less motivation for Facebook to innovate in areas like privacy and stop collecting as much data, because in some sense, we're captive.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner. And I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now. And it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. In this episode of Tech Intersect, I am really, really excited to welcome Tom Kemp to the show. Tom is a Silicon Valley-based author of the forthcoming book, Containing Big Tech, How to Protect Our Civil Rights, Economy, and Democracy, as well as an entrepreneur, investor, and policy advisor. Tom was the founder and CEO of Centrify, renamed Delinea in 2022, a leading cybersecurity cloud provider that amassed over 2,000 enterprise customers, including over 60% of the Fortune 50. He also has had some outstanding reviews for his forthcoming book. Certainly caught my eye. Ro Khanna, for one, Alexander Vindman. So this is a heavy hitter, and I'm very fortunate to have this conversation. I invited Tom on to talk about the threats of big tech and the path forward to rein in online surveillance, AI, and tech monopolies. We will talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, Tom, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So it's definitely a pleasure to have you with us today. And could you start by telling us what motivated you even to write Containing Big Tech, How to Protect Our Civil Rights, Economy, and Democracy?
Absolutely. Well, first, I wanted to create a simple and comprehensive look at issues concerning big tech that your Uncle Larry or your average politician could say, aha, I get it, without having to hand them 500 articles and say, go at it. And, you know, it actually works to big tech's advantage that there is confusion on the actual issues itself. Second, I also wanted to say, you know, there are actually some simple solutions out there to many of these problems, which I provide in the book. And then finally, I really wanted to explore some recent news that has made some significant headlines, which really haven't been covered in the past or tied into big tech. For example, the Dobbs decision, the fact that we're really in a post-abortion rights America, the growth and rise of AI, and the rise of TikTok and this attention economy where more and more of us and our kids are becoming addicted to this social media and entertainment platform. So I wanted to write a fresh and up-to-date look at big tech and help regular people just get a feel for what are the issues and how can I actually go about addressing some of these things.
This is really, really important because it's so big, the topic and the impact. Right. The depth and the breadth of where we are and the rapid pace of technology and innovation is really starting to leave a lot of people behind. But part of, and my angle to it is focusing on Web3 technologies, certainly cryptographically secured assets, the organization of data with blockchains and the like. But there's so many other technologies having a substantial impact on just the future of work and wealth, creativity. And your book really touches on why we have to pay attention, that it's no longer acceptable is not the right term, but it's not enough to just participate passively because of the impact. So, for example, in your book, you discuss the overcollection and the weaponization of sensitive data by tech, big tech in particular. Can you elaborate on what you see as the most pressing concern in the area for the layperson?
Absolutely. Well, stepping back at a high level, I believe that we have five tech monopolies that are some of the most powerful corporations the world has ever seen with amazing reach. Take, for example, Google has 4 billion users. That's half the world's population. And they're mainly unregulated and, in my opinion, are now causing serious threats to our civil rights and democracy. And it first and foremost starts with the fact that our data is and continues to be way over-collected, and it's now being weaponized against us in a post-abortion America. And that weaponization could easily extend to trans, LGBTQ America, but also could be used to further discriminate against people with digital redlining, etc. So one of the messages that I have in the book is that, look, there have been past monopolies like Standard Oil, right? Standard Oil was incredibly powerful, but they did not know everything about you. And this weaponization can occur, for example, if there's so much data being collected about you, it could help facilitate identity theft. Facebook was actually hacked 5 times in 2019, right? And that's your username, your passwords, your phone numbers, etc. The fact that big tech and other companies collect so much information that they actually know some personal things about you that maybe your family or friends don't know. Do you have cancer? Right. Are you gay, etc.? And it could be used potentially to discriminate against you. Like, maybe I don't want to hire this person if I find out by talking to a data broker or looking up that this person has a medical condition or pregnant. So, and then of course, finally, this data can be used with AI to potentially manipulate you by playing on your fears, putting you into rabbit holes, etc. So this is a serious issue that goes to the heart of the not only us as individuals and our personal privacy, but it significantly impacts society and our democracy.
Yeah, you touched on some really, really important points. It makes me think of previous presidential campaigns, et cetera, and the collection of data and the way we, in particular in the United States, but this is certainly a global concern, participate in our own demise in the sense of if you're not paying for something, then you are the product, right? The idea that sign up here for free, we're kind of like in a microwave society where we want what we want when we want it. And this idea of protection of rights. I have these conversations as an info privacy law professor with my students, and I think they feel like I just have a tinfoil hat on. Could you speak to the idea of what reasonable steps we can take as citizens to better protect our data and where we share it, for example?
Yeah, I think people are so comfortable with giving up all this information and data about themselves, and they enter these walled gardens and they get these free services. And in the past, it was about being served annoying ads like, oh, I was looking at red shoes and now on one website and now for the next 2 weeks, every ad is a red shoe, right?
Right.
You just can't avoid it. And that was like annoying. That was a little creepy, et cetera. But I do think it does get back to the point where people and even foreign nation states and other actors have figured out the same type of data that can follow you around and serve you red shoe ads, you know, can be used in other ways to maybe push you or rile you up and get you into a rabbit hole or use that against you. And you may not see it. You may not get the job. You may not get the loan, et cetera. For example, that Meta was actually found and fined by the Health and Human Services that advertisers were using the fact that you could select, like, do I want to advertise to, you know, married people, etc. And so people were actually not serving ads to certain types of people, which is what advertisers like, having that flexibility to serve ads to women or people with children. But all of a sudden, if I don't want those people buying or renting my unit, etc. So what can people do? right? Well, the first thing is that there's actually some easy fixes. The way that most data is collected about you is via third-party cookies. So when you visit a website, you get a cookie on your computer. And if it's a first-party cookie is with what the website you're interacting with. And those are good because they remember that you've been there before and you don't have to re-sign on, et cetera. But there's a lot of third-party cookies that then start tracking you across the internet. And then they can also figure out what you put into your shopping carts, et cetera. So one thing you can do is actually just block third-party cookies from your browser. Naturally, the big tech companies that provide the browsers don't have that on by default. The second thing is on your mobile device, Apple came out with this feature called App Tracking Transparency that blocks the third-party data brokers that have hooks into your mobile apps, stops that data being sent from them. I highly recommend everyone turn that on. Now, in the Android space, you're going to have to use like a third-party. DuckDuckGo has something similar to the Apple ATT. And then finally, but at the end of the day, and you know this as well as I do, is that we do need a federal privacy law. Thankfully, 10 states now have privacy law. I'm in California, and we led the nation in that. But at the end of the day, I think there needs to be a groundswell to really push Washington to put in place a federal privacy law. Because as you know, privacy is not in the Constitution. There's no mention of the word privacy in the Constitution. California added that in 1972, but we need to have some laws that help give us privacy rights, especially in an AI world where there's just going to be more invasion of our privacy because of the ability to analyze and collect and infer information about us.
So let's talk more about that with respect to AI. What measures can be taken to ensure that it's used responsibly and ethically by big tech companies? I think it's a big ask because until they are required to, I don't think they will. We've seen in other countries where, you know, from a EU perspective, for example, when there are additional protections at a higher level than just a particular segment of the population or a particular area, that big tech responds in kind, but they're required to. This is not a benevolent exchange here because data really is king, queen, or sovereign. So to dial back to the original question, particularly with respect to artificial intelligence, one, your definition at a high level of what that is and what measures can be taken to make sure that it's used responsibly and ethically with respect to data collection, storage, and manipulation.
Yeah, so we've historically had algorithms, and that's kind of preset coded recipes that say, if this happens, then do this, etc. And actually, algorithms have been defined for thousands of years, right? And that was the original how software was built, was big algorithms, etc. What's happened recently, and people dreamed up of the concept of artificial intelligence 50, 60 years ago, but now it's actually coming into practice, which you can now have algorithms that learn. Okay, that actually adjust themselves on the fly based on the data coming in. And so before it was kind of static how these algorithms worked, now they're able to learn and then adapt themselves, etc. So they almost become, I'm not going to say they're living, but they become organisms that adjust and adapt, etc. Now, historically, we've actually had artificial intelligence for a number of years, and historically, artificial intelligence has been used for automated decision making. And oftentimes, if we get a loan, stock trades, et cetera, is done via artificial intelligence that, based on data coming in, adjust, et cetera. But it's really gotten to the forefront just in the last year because of generative AI that actually creates text or images, et cetera. But look, there's a lot of good about AI, you know, medical. Sure. Safer cars, voice recognition, personal assistance, etc. But there's a lot of exploitive uses of AI. And if you look at the large big tech companies, two of the largest big tech companies, Meta and Google, are advertising companies. That's the vast majority of their revenue. And now they're going to use AI to pummel us with more targeted ads. And so how do we solve this? Is that, frankly, we do need legislation because, and probably TikTok is the penultimate company that takes all these micro signals of how you're interacting with videos. And I've even had people say that TikTok knows me better than I know myself because they're figuring out what you're doing. And so we do need regulations that especially for children, that stop autoplay, that have explicit stops. We need some guardrails there. And then the worst is the dark patterns that trick you to do something. And just the other week, the FTC actually sued Amazon because it was incredibly painfully difficult, according to the lawsuit, for people to actually try to unsubscribe and drop the Prime membership. It took like one or two steps to do it, but it was like you basically walked into a roach hotel and you couldn't get out as well.
Couldn't get out.
And so we need to address that. And there's other exploitive uses of AI, such as algorithms that discriminate. There's deep fakes that are occurring, that including, you know, revenge porn using deep fakes, etc. So there are things that we need to do that the legislation needs to factor in to address this, because the problem is only going to get worse.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tanya M. Evans, author of Digital Money Demystified. And I want to let you know that to stay on the leading edge of any opportunity, especially investing, you have to empower yourself with the tools and resources needed to keep your knowledge and skills current. And if you're relying on last year's information or even last month's, look, you're already behind. Sure, you can try to figure this out on your own at YouTube University. The problem is, it's difficult to separate fact from fiction with so many carnival barkers banking on your inexperience. And of course, there are the naysayers, usually from legacy finance, banking on your fear while they quietly help their high net worth clients to invest. All of it muddies the waters when all you want to know is how to get in safely, legally, and confidently so you're not left behind. That's why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, where I take the top 10 crypto myths head on and give you well-researched, well-supported facts to empower you to make good choices out there in the new digital cash economy. As a law professor who developed the first blockchain crypto and law online certificate program, a retail and corporate crypto policy and education trainer, and a thought leader appearing regularly on national media, I've done the heavy lifting so you don't have to. Look, there are plenty of books and courses on which crypto assets to invest in. Digital Money Demystified is the book you read before you dive into those. So head to digitalmoneydemystified.com to learn more and prepare for the future of money and wealth today.
This is really important because they're not folks who are making these decisions. Our elected officials aren't dumb, and they are aware of this. And I think of different parts of legislative initiatives. I think of 230. I think of a lot of different ways that legislators can create and enact legislation that will have some teeth. I see a lot of times we have these congressional hearings for committees and subcommittees, and they haul in all of the leaders of big tech, and there's a lot of saber rattling, and then things don't change. I'm particularly concerned about that because of its impact on competition. I see a lot of anti-competitive behavior, the impact on entrepreneurship, which is vital as a matter of innovation. So can you talk about how big tech's dominant market position is stifling competition and entrepreneurship, and why that's detrimental to the economy and ultimately society?
Yeah. So look, big tech has created walled gardens, and they entice you into their walled gardens with all these free services. But once you're inside the walled gardens, they continuously collect your data, serve you ads, and they want to keep you in the gardens, and it's very hard to escape the gardens. And part of the reason is that big tech platforms lack interoperability. So say if I want to get off of Facebook, but unless all my friends leave en masse, I can't communicate with those that remain on Facebook. So I'm kind of stuck using Facebook. So it actually means that there's less motivation for Facebook to innovate in areas like privacy and stop collecting as much data, because in some sense, we're captive. And so I think the one thing is needed is we need to require interoperability to allow people to escape the gardens. The other big issue, especially when you look at companies like Amazon or even Apple, that they provide a marketplace, but they also compete in the marketplace. So say if you're one of your listeners wants to build a business delivering mobile apps, they have a great idea for a mobile app. And the problem is that you have to pay Google or Apple 30% if you sell it through on Google or Apple, et cetera. Or say you want to provide ebooks, but the issue is Google or Apple offers that ebook, but they don't have to pay the 30% platform tax. So Google and Apple are actually able to offer solutions that are cheaper because they basically self-preference and they provide an added tax. And so eventually what happens is because they provide the marketplace and they participate in the marketplace with their own products, and they can preference their own products, or in the case of Amazon, they see this one product selling a lot. Guess what? Next week, they now have a basics version.
Right.
And so they can kind of sit back and see what products are selling the most, and they can clone and copy those as well, as alleged in various, you know, claims by the FTC and attorney generals. So what we need to do to address this is, and I think the Biden administration with Chair Lina Khan is doing it, starting to ramp up on the antitrust matters, we need to stop self-preferencing of the big tech products in their marketplace. We need to actually have a division between the market and the products group, and so that they can't kind of gather the data in the market and then create their own products. And we probably need to cut into the mobile app charges for if you buy or having to use their payment processing system as well, because they get this cut. And Visa gets a couple percentages, you know, Apple and Google get 30%. That's not fair, especially when there's only two marketplaces on mobile. And frankly, which is Google Android and Apple iOS, in the case of e-commerce, it's really becoming just Amazon, and you got to play in that marketplace. And a lot of small, medium businesses are getting squeezed because they have to pay for play in those markets. So we need to do more. And I'll say one last thing is that this problem of monopoly exasperates the problems that I talked about with privacy and digital surveillance, with the problems that we talked about with AI, because there's no competitive pressure for them to better compete in the market on those type of capabilities because we're stuck inside their walled gardens. And so Meta gets hacked five times, and they have the, in 2019, they get the Cambridge Analytica, they apologize, but the same issues come up again, right? You know, and so we need to actually introduce competition, and we can't allow the tech vendors to self-preference. We can't allow them to offer a market, but then participate in the marketplace because they have an unfair advantage.
Do you think that I've heard this argument too? First of all, we've heard this argument in the banking sector, this idea that they're too big to fail and whatever that might mean in big tech. What's the argument against your thesis?
Well, actually, I think really in the case of banks, too big to fail. In the case of big tech, it's they're too big to care in terms of making fundamental differences. Because at the end of the day, 97% of Meta's revenue comes from advertising.
Right.
And so, and they fundamentally believe that they have to collect more information about us so they can sell more premium advertising, because they're telling people that behavioral-based advertising is better than contextual advertising, which is if you just go to a website and you advertise based on what's on the website. Behavioral is like, I know this person, so I'm going to follow that person around the internet and serve ads that are handcrafted, just like the red shoes analogy as well. So I think the counter argument to what I'm saying is that, oh, technology companies come and go, blah, 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 you know, let the market kind of sort things out. They can self-regulate, et cetera. And, you know, we don't want to cook the golden goose, which technology, take into account that these five companies represent over 20% of the total market cap of the Standard and Poor's 500,
right?
Just five companies have 20%, right? And so, do we want to hurt the U.S. economy by, you know, regulating big tech? And I'm saying is that if you look at what's happened in the past when AT&T was broken up, mm-hmm. it caused a telecommunications revolution that we enjoyed. When Microsoft was forced not to bundle their web browser, mm-hmm. it actually opened up the door for Google, et cetera. So my counter argument to their argument is competition is good. We need more competition, that we can't have the key digital markets be solely consolidated in a few vendors and just kind of hope that they'll do the right thing. And the reality is that time and time again, we see the headlines of them not doing the right thing, because their focus is not on society. It's not on your kid. Their focus is on their share price, their market cap, their shareholders, their employees, etc. The priority is not necessarily, hey, can I dial down serving up ads to your kids? Because frankly, they're just trying to make the products more addictive to children, for example.
Absolutely. It's, the bottom line is a for-profit entity that will continue to be in the business of acquiring, it's really customer acquisition and creating this ecosystem that you have something that sells something that sells something that sells something. And once you're in, you can't get out. And that's where we find ourselves. There's a lot of predictions and hopes, I think, from others about a decentralized web. That might be a story for another day. Imagining a world where we have more autonomy and control over our data and what that might look like in a Web3 world. But in the time that we have now, I'm interested in some big takeaways from Containing Big Tech. If we crack open the book, it comes out August of 2023. And in your closing remarks, please tell us how to get more information about it. But let's just have a few big takeaways from Containing Big Tech.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what I'm trying to do is create a simple and comprehensive look at the issues out there. And for a person that, you know, doesn't live and breathe this like you and I, that you could hand this book to someone and say, okay, just read or read a couple chapters. And I think the light bulbs will start going off in terms of kind of understanding it. And I think it does work to big tech's advantage that there's confusion out there, et cetera. But I kind of want to open people's eyes. But I also want to give them simple solutions. And I actually have an appendix of like, here are a couple of the internet settings that you can put forth and turn on that actually will significantly reduce the amount of data being collected and not impact your experience as well. And then I even say, well, if you're going to come out with a federal privacy law, here's what should it be here. So literally, you could hand that to a politician, etc. So the motivation, the goal behind the book is that this is a pressing issue. Every day we have screaming headlines about AI. We have headlines about TikTok and its Chinese owned. We have concerns, especially with the recent Supreme Court decisions about discrimination and digital redlining, et cetera. And so what I'm trying to say is that there are actually relatively simple solutions for us as individuals and, of course, policymakers as well, that I've tried to put together and kind of boil it down. And so if you want to learn more, you can go to my website, tomkemp.ai, where I have a blog. You can read about the book, etc. But also, if you want to order the book, it's containingbigtech.com, which will take you directly to a pre-order, and people are ordering it right now, and it's going to be available really soon in August. So if you listen to this before August, you can place an order and you can have it in a few weeks.
Absolutely. Folks, it is critically important to support books in the pre-order stage. It signals to the industry that we care about this. We care about the voice. We need more voices in this space presenting in an expert fashion the importance of controlling our data, about putting some parameters around big tech. It seems like the horses left the barn, but we can do this. There are a few steps that we can take on our own, and also to press our legislators who are elected into office to represent our best interests. When we are dealing with companies that have, they are beholden to their shareholders. Unless you're a shareholder, it's not you. And even if you are, you may be shareholder, but ultimately you're citizen. We have to care about this. We have to not look to others. We are the ones we've been looking for. Containing Big Tech gives an outline and a step-by-step of some easy things that we can do and that we can ask our legislative representatives to do as well. Tom Kemp, it's been a real pleasure. I'm so grateful for your voice and the work that you're doing. We'll do our part here at Tech Intersect to make sure that people know. We will make sure that they hear this before August. And then we want to have you back in the fall to maybe year-end update of where we are and some things as a matter of legislation and where we go from here, if that sounds good.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag TechIntersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a traitor. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap, and definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.